Good evening. This is the October 14th, 2025 regular meeting of the Rent Board Commission. I am Deputy Director and Board Secretary Barbara Texidor. Members of the public, the Rent Board Commission meeting where the commissioners may be considering your case on appeal is not an interactive hearing. You will have an opportunity to address the commission, and the process is designed to invite input and feedback from individuals in the community. However, the process does not allow questions to be answered in the meeting or for members of the public to engage in back and forth conversation with the commissioners. When the public comment item on the agenda is announced, that will be the moment for members of the public to step up to the podium to provide their comment. The comment can be regarding an appeal on the agenda or can be a general comment regarding any subject. You will have 3 minutes to provide your comment. If you have an interpreter interpreting your comment, you will have 6 minutes. You are encouraged, but not required, to state your name for the record. If you are giving comment regarding an item on the agenda, please state which item you are speaking about. Please note that anything you say during public comment cannot be used as evidence with regard to the item on which you are speaking. Once your time is up, staff will so indicate. You should hear a timer beeping and you will be informed your time is up. City policies, along with federal, state, and local law, prohibit discriminatory conduct against city employees and others during public meetings and will not be tolerated.
Thank you. So now we'll proceed with the reading of the Ramita Shaloni land acknowledgement. We acknowledge that we are on the unceded ancestral homeland of the Ramita Shaloni, who are the original inhabitants of the San Francisco Peninsula. As Indigenous stewards of this land, in accordance with their traditions, the Ramita Shaloni have never ceded, lost, nor forgotten their responsibilities as the caregivers of this place, as well as for all peoples who reside in the Indigenous territory. As guests, we recognize that we benefit from living and working on the traditional homeland. We wish to pay our respects by acknowledging the ancestors, elders, and relatives of the Ramitish community, and by affirming their sovereign rights as First People. Amen. And then we go to roll call.
President Gruber? President Gruber not present. Commissioner Wasserman?
Aye, here.
Commissioner Wasserman present. Commissioner Mossbrucker?
Here.
Commissioner Mossbrucker present. Commissioner Chan? Commissioner Chan not present. Commissioner Hung? Commissioner Hung not present. Commissioner Tom?
Here.
Commissioner Tom present. Commissioner Klein? Commissioner Klein not present. Commissioner Crow?
Here.
Commissioner Crow present. Commissioner Haley?
Here.
Commissioner Haley present. I want to also acknowledge that the following staff members are also present. Senior Administrative Law Judge Joey Kumis, Senior Administrative Law Judge Aaron Katayama, Executive Director Christina Varner, and myself, Deputy Director and Board Secretary Barbara Texidor. Craig Van Spronson is handling IT support.
Move to remarks from the public.
It is now time for the first of two public comment periods this evening. The second public comment period will occur after the consideration of appeals. Members of the public, the Rent Board Commission meeting where the commissioners may be considering your case on appeal is not an interactive hearing. You will have an opportunity to address the commission, and the process is designed to invite input and feedback from individuals in the community. However, the process does not allow questions to be answered in the meeting or for members of the public to engage in back and forth conversation with the commissioners. Both public comment periods tonight are for general public comment regarding any subject and for all items listed on the agenda. You will have 3 minutes to provide your comment. If you have an interpreter interpreting your comment, you will have 6 minutes. You are encouraged, but not required, to state your name for the record. If you are giving comment regarding an item on the agenda, please state which item you are speaking about. Please note that anything you say during public comment cannot be used as evidence with regard to the item on which you are speaking. Once your time is up, staff will so indicate. You should hear a timer beeping and you will be informed your time is up. City policies, along with federal, state, and local law, prohibit discriminatory or harassing conduct against city employees and others during public meetings and will not be tolerated. We will now take comment from members of the public here in the meeting room. I will call the names of the members of the public in the order that they appear on the sign-in sheet. So the first name that appears here is Ninad Godi.
I'm not making a comment.
So the next name is Annie Vartanian.
Commission notes, I'm Annie Vartanian. And I'm actually just letting you know or informing you that myself and the landlord have a settlement and release agreement that we, that I just received. And so I shared this with you guys just now. Just leave it at that. I am appealing the decision that has come down to us under section 1.21, tenancy and occupancy. I've put the factual reasons on why, including with supporting documentation. That all being said, it looks like that me and my landlord have come to an agreement. So I do want you to take a look at settlement and release for us to conclude this portion of our discussions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public who wish to make public comment?
Yes, I would, please.
My name is Justin Goodman from the law firm Sachs and Friedman, and I would like to speak on behalf of the landlord of 984 Hampshire Street. This is petition T240943. So we submitted written materials for this one, and I won't belabor most of what's in there, but I did want to touch on three main points. The first is an issue of notice. Now, to reach the conclusion that was reached in this decision, the administrative law judge had to adopt a rule. And that rule was that a formal notice was required to restore the housing service. In this case, it was subletting, to restore the housing service and the former base rent of the apartment. If that is to be the case, though, that formal notice, and the administrative law judge identified the procedure in Civil Code 827, if that was to be the rule to restore it, then likewise, that would have needed to have been the rule to remove it. And what we have in the facts here was, frankly, just an uncomfortable conversation between a landlord and tenant with no further action. So the landlord would put to this commission that if notice was required to restore, notice would have been required to remove in the first place, and therefore there was no legal basis to find a reduction in services here. Now, even if this ad hoc rule could be applied here, no severance actually happened. Again, this was an uncomfortable conversation with a tenant, and it wasn't even this tenant. It was his original master tenant, who the landlord believed was living across the country in New York and was subletting without any kind of notice. And whether or not a housing service is implicated, sometimes that can implicate things like rent gouging of a subtenant or a secreting of vacancy decontrol rights. So this conversation certainly was, in theory, an appropriate one. But what followed was simply that the tenant never actually tried to sublet. We don't have something like the demolition of a garage parking space to create an accessory dwelling unit or something. We just have a tenant's subjective belief that he could not sublet, which leads to my third point, one of enforcement. This commission is obviously well aware of what is required to make a lease that has an enforceable no subletting provision, because this commission wrote those regulations. There should be no question, this is exhibit one to the written materials, this lease would not have supported even a landlord's reasonable refusal of a request to sublet. Instead, this was an entirely inert act. So what we have here is simply a tenant who slept on his rights, obviously did have counsel in these proceedings, and certainly was presumably informed of what it would take to sublet, which is just that he probably could have done it with impunity unless it implicated some kind of nuisance behavior. So at the end of the day, the facts of this decision do not support the conclusion, and the legal basis applied here was self-defeating. So the landlord would urge the commission to reverse the decision of the administrative law judge. And thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? That a close public comment. I move on to approval of the minutes.
I would move to approve the minutes from our September meeting.
I have a second.
Second.
Call the vote, please.
Motion to approve the minutes of September 9th, 2025. Commissioner Wasserman.
Aye.
Commissioner Tom.
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbrooker.
Aye.
Commissioner Crowe.
Aye.
Commissioner Haley.
Stand.
So now we'll move to consideration of appeals. Can I ask indulgence? Can we call item E first? With the presentation of the settlement and release, do we need to even have any discussion of item?
Well, I see here in the recitals that the landlord or in the agreement, the landlord will withdraw its petition, but they can't withdraw the petition unless you grant the appeal, remand the case in order for the ALJ to vacate the decision or remand it, and I guess they can withdraw it.
Okay. So let's go ahead and do that so that they don't have to go through the rest of our discussion. So item E, 1900 Goff Street, Unit 601. The tenants appeal the decision granting the landlord's petition seeking a rent increase pursuant to Rules and Regulations Section 1.21. Neither tenant petitioner appeared for the scheduled virtual hearing. In the decision, the ALJ determined that the landlord was entitled to raise the tenant's rent pursuant to Section 1.21. because there was no tenant in occupancy of the unit at the time the petition was filed on May 28, 2024. As the evidence established that the tenants own a home they occupy as their principal place of residence. In the appeal, the tenants argued that the unit is their principal place of residence, that their temporary absence from the unit was due to family illness, that the landlord never notified them that the rent had been increased to $3,500, and declared under penalty of perjury that one of the tenants had not received the notice of the rent board hearing and was on a flight when the rent board staff attempted to reach her. Do I have
yes.
any motions?
I do. I would move to remand this matter to the administrative law judge to consider the settlement and release agreement that was just submitted to the commission dated October 14th.
Second.
Call the vote. It's a motion to accept the appeal and remand the case to the ALJ to consider the settlement and release agreement submitted to the commission dated October 14th, 2025. Commissioner Wasserman.
Aye.
Commissioner Crowe.
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbrooker.
Aye.
Commissioner Tom.
Aye.
Commissioner Haley.
Aye.
All right. So the case will be remanded for the ALJ to consider vacating the decision. Moving back to regular order of the agenda. We'll go to item A, 2375 25th Avenue, Unit 4. The landlord appeals the decision granting in part the tenant's claim for decreased housing service. In the decision, the ALJ found the landlord liable to the tenant for rent reductions totaling $693, plus an ongoing monthly reduction of $100 for leaking windows, denied the tenant's other claim. In the appeal, the landlord argues that the evidence does not support the decision, that the award is excessive, and that she made a good faith effort to repair the windows in a timely manner. Do we have any discussion?
Move to deny.
I'll second. Any further discussion? We vote.
A motion to deny the appeal. Commissioner Crowe.
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbacher?
Aye.
Commissioner Tom?
Aye.
Commissioner Haley? Commissioner Wasson?
Aye.
The appeal was denied. Move now to item E. Commissioner Hung, have a seat. Item B is 416 Bryant Street, Unit 9. The tenant submitted his appeal 91 days late because he agreed with the decision and did not think there was an issue until his landlord tried to evict him when he applied the rent credits.
I would move to consider the late file appeal.
Second.
Is there any discussion? Call for the vote.
A motion to find good cause for the late filing of the appeal. Commissioner Wasserman?
Aye.
Commissioner Crowe?
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbacher?
Aye.
Commissioner Hung?
Aye.
Commissioner Tom?
Aye.
The tenant on Lyme reappeals the decision granting his claims for unlawful rent increase and decreased housing services. In the decision, the ALJ found the landlord liable to the tenant for unlawful rent increases in the amount of $164.42 and $330 for failure to provide weekly common area cleaning. On appeal, the tenant claims that the decision contains inaccuracies regarding the rent paid between April and June 2025 and submits additional evidence supporting his claim.
So, there was a clerical error?
So my understanding, basis for the appeal, is that there was a gap between when the hearing was held and when the decision was issued. So the ALJ didn't know how much the tenant had paid during those months. So I think she just assumed it was the same amount he had been paying and said that the party should make any adjustments if the tenant paid some other amount. Subsequently, I guess, tenant says that him and the landlord are now locked into a dispute as to what was paid for that 3-month period. So he wants you to remand the case for the ALJ to make specific findings based on the evidence as to what he paid so that they can avoid having to go to court over it.
Which I think that's my motion then, to remand to address the clerical error during that interim period.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote, please.
Mind if I just ask for clarification? So we're calling it a clerical error still.
So it's not,
not a clerical error. It's evidentiary hearing to address the time period in question, the 3 months.
It's a motion to accept the appeal and remand the case to the ALJ to consider the evidence regarding the 3 months. That the evidence regarding the 3 months that rent was paid.
3 months that rent was paid. It was
April through June of 2025.
April through June 2025.
I'll call it again. It's a motion to accept the appeal and remand the case to the ALJ to consider evidence regarding the rent paid between April and June 2025.
That's right.
Commissioner Wasserman?
Aye.
Commissioner Crowe?
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbacher?
Aye.
Commissioner Hung?
Aye.
Commissioner Tom?
Aye.
Moving on to item C, 984 Hampshire Street. The landlord appeals the decision granting the tenant's claim for unlawful rent increase. In a prior decision, the ALJ found that the landlord had unreasonably refused the tenant's request to approve replacement roommates. That decision reduced the tenant's rent until the landlord granted the tenant's request for 2 additional occupants and issued a written notice of rent increase to restore the prior rent amount. In the present decision, the ALJ determined that because the landlord failed to serve a notice of rent increase to reinstate the prior rent, the tenant's rent remained at the reduced amount. On appeal, the landlord contends that both decisions were erroneous, asserting that the tenant never requested approval for any specific roommate, that the tenant could have moved in replacement roommates with or without the landlord's approval, and even assuming that the landlord was refusing to allow roommates, he granted approval before the prior decision was issued, which according to the landlord automatically restored the prior rent. We have any discussion?
Move to deny.
I'll second. Any further discussion? Call the vote.
It seems unfair, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
There's no parity for the landlord in that he had to come up with written notice to restore the rent, but it was never established and the tenant couldn't sign away their rights to not pick a roommate of their choosing. There's no evidence that the landlord took away that right. So I don't see the parity in why the landlord would be punished for something that he didn't take that he didn't cause to happen in the first place.
We have a prior decision that was not appealed, finding that the landlord had unreasonably refused the tenant's request to approve replacement roommates. So in this instance, the ALJ clearly spelled out what had to be done, and the landlord chose not to do it, and instead we're faced with a second opinion on the same issue, and I think that's perfectly inappropriate.
One thing too, Kathy, actually the first decision was appealed and the appeal was denied by this commission.
There was no writ filed for that denial.
The landlord was aware of what he had to do and didn't do it.
The notice issue too.
I have no further comment.
Okay. Call for the vote.
Motion to deny the appeal. Commissioner Crowe?
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbacher?
Aye.
Commissioner Wasserman?
Aye.
Commissioner Hung?
Aye.
Chair Tom?
Aye.
So the appeal is denied. Moving on to item D, 3042 Sacramento Street, Unit 5. The tenant appeals the decision granting the landlord's petition seeking a rent increase pursuant to Rules and Regulations, Section 1.21. In the decision, the ALJ determined that the landlord was entitled to raise the tenant's rent pursuant to Section 1.21. Because there was no tenant occupancy of the unit at the time the petition was filed on March 6, 2025, as the tenant resided elsewhere and her absence from the unit was not a reasonable temporary period. In the appeal, the tenant argues that the unit is her principal place of residence, that she was absent from the unit due to family and her own medical emergency, that her medical situation was not fully considered in this decision, and that the landlord has sent her harassing emails so that she would vacate the unit and they could sell the property.
I have to recuse myself on this. I filed with the Ethics Commission. I did not participate in this matter, but the landlord, Ms. Fazziola, has consulted with my office on occasion. So.
Is there any discussion on this case?
Do we have a motion yet?
I move to deny.
Second.
Any further discussion?
No.
No.
Motion to deny the appeal. Commissioner Tom?
Aye.
Commissioner Crowe?
Aye.
Commissioner Mossbrucker?
Aye.
Commissioner Hung?
Can we recall Commissioner Wasserman, please? So item D, the appeal was denied. And now we would move on to the second remarks from the public.
It is now time for the section of two public comment periods this evening. This second public comment period tonight is for both general public comment regarding any subject and for all items listed on the agenda. You will have 3 minutes to provide your comment. If you have an interpreter interpreting your comment, you will have 6 minutes. You are encouraged but not required to state your name for the record. If you're giving comment regarding an item on the agenda, please state which item you're speaking about. Please note that anything you say during public comment cannot be used as evidence with regard to the item on which you're speaking. Once your time is up, staff will so indicate. You should hear a timer beeping and you will be informed your time is up. We will now take comment from members of the public here in the meeting room. Please step forward one at a time.
Does anyone wish to make public comment? No one having stepped forward, I will close public comment. And we'll move on to communications.
Thank you, Vice President Mossbrucker. Give me just one moment. Good evening, commissioners. This is Executive Director Christina Varner. You have received a lot of communications for this meeting. You should have received news articles from Mission Local and the San Francisco Chronicle. You would have received a memorandum regarding proposed operational efficiency for unlawful rent increase petitions dated October 7th, 2025. You have received amended rent ordinance section 37.10C. An updated table of contents and an updated list of ordinance amendments. You have received departmental workload statistics for August 2025. You've received a copy of the rent board response letter to the Commission Streamlining Task Force dated September 26th, 2025. You've received the Commission Streamlining Task Force decision log that was issued after the October 1st meeting. You received an updated commissioner roster from the month of September. And finally, you have received draft 2 of the Rent Board Commission introductory remarks. If you think you have not received one of those things, please do let us know. But there are a lot and you should have them both electronically and in paper format.
Can I ask a question on item B, the operational efficiency? What's the workload of cases that someone doesn't have a license?
Actually, I did a evaluation of that, and right now there's about 15. So it's not a huge amount. We're more doing this as sort of a temporary pilot in anticipation that we will get more.
And either side still has the right to ask for a hearing if. Okay.
Can I ask a question? How does it arise? Is it something that is it a defense? I mean, or is it like is it pointed out by the hearing officer? I mean, who is it?
The tenant files a petition saying that the rent was increased.
It was a defense.
Defense.
Objection.
Objection to the rent increase.
The tenant files the petition and the screeners identify that the only issue is whether or not the landlord was licensed.
I was just trying to imagine if there was ever like an observation they were not in, but since we have the inventory, we know who is and isn't in compliance, whether or not anyone's looking at that in consideration of the appeals. I guess not.
15 people looked at it.
15, at least 15. Just internally, I didn't know if it was an additional observation, because we've seen them come up so far in, were there other, objections to the rent increase? You know, and the appropriateness of the rent increase.
Do you see it arise in conjunction with other petitions?
Yeah.
And so if someone filed a decreased housing service petition or a rent determination petition, and we identify that there's no license, that usually does come up in the course of other petitions.
But this is solely for that, no other combined reason. Okay.
So my question is, do we need to put item B and item H on our new business calendar? If we want to assume them.
So item H is under, is currently under old business. And if you would like to, you know, commence discussion around item B, you can certainly agendize that for the next meeting as new business.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further question about communications? Okay, then we'll move on to the director's report.
Thank you, Vice President Mossbrucker. Good evening again, commissioners. This is Executive Director Christina Varner. So the first batch of the 2026 housing inventory and rent board fee informational notices for 360,000 units went out the first week of October. We've seen an excellent response to date. The department has collected $230,000 in 2026 rent board fees, despite the fee not even having been assessed yet. So thank you to those who already paid. A reminder to owners that if you think your unit might be exempt from the fee and you have questions, please call 311 or file an exemption request rather than paying the fee first. More resources are spent, and it is more challenging for the department to issue refunds than to deal with the matter up front. So thank you for giving 311 a call. The 2026 housing inventory reporting period is in full swing, with over 2,700 reports having been made already across 1,000 parcels, with over 2,000 licenses already having been issued. And I mean, this is extraordinary, honestly. This is the first time it's ever happened like this early. So I think word is officially out. And I would like to give a continued acknowledgement to the inventory and fee unit team, who are dealing with increased inquiries over email and escalations from 311. And also to our public information unit, who's dealing with related phone calls and increased inquiries at the front counter. We had quite a busy day today. So thank you to all those staff. Regarding outreach, shortly after our last board meeting on September 9th, I participated on the 11th in the Professional Property Managers Association monthly membership meeting, discussing decreased housing services. And that was a fun time. Thank you, Commissioner Wasserman.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Then on September 18th, SFAA staff came to the rent board to present on SFAA services to rent board staff, which was a great connection. And we had members of our inventory and fee unit and public information unit present. And then later in the month, on the 22nd and 30th, the rent board participated in trainings with the SF Anti-Displacement Coalition and Housing Rights Committee. Also excellent trainings and great connections being made with new advocates. And so upcoming on the 25th, rent board staff will table and have staff present in Cantonese, Mandarin, and English at the 20th annual Chinatown Community Resource Fair, which is coordinated by the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. And that is all I have for outreach. I wanted to update you regarding the Commission Streamlining Task Force. So you got some documents in your packets and you received some email communications from staff since the last meeting, and things moved rather quickly once we got some information from the task force. So as you're aware, the department and commissioners received the staff recommendation from the Commission Streamlining Task Force regarding the Rent Board Commission on September 22nd, shortly before the related task force meeting on October 1st. And the recommendations of the task force at that time were to move appellate functions of this commission to the Board of Appeals and to institute term limits on rent board commissioners. As you know, the department issued a letter responding to these recommendations that we believed would detriment the agency's functions. With support from yourselves and both landlord and tenant community members, much feedback was given to the task force members. I provided public comment at the task force meeting and was able to answer some questions for task force members. And it was quite enlightening, as it showed that some were just completely unfamiliar with the way this commission functions. So I thought it was very critical that we provided so much feedback. Ultimately, both landlords and tenants coming together on this issue led the task force to vote unanimously to maintain the rent board commission as is and to not touch it, as they said. And I thank both President Gruber and Vice President Mossbrucker for leading the charge for each side and submitting written support of our position to the commission streamlining task force. So you've now received a decision log from the commission streamlining task force, which shows that no changes are being made to this commission, thankfully.
Actually, thank you. That letter was fantastic that you put together. That was your staff. Really, really good. So, and that was great how sometimes politics makes strange bedfellows, but we did it.
Yeah, I think everyone sort of
put
their differences aside, but yeah. We all agreed on this, on these important matters. And so I was really pleased, but it was quite a learning experience being there. Just have to say, I was there for 4.5 hours before a matter was called. And it was, you know, it's a huge job, a huge undertaking that this task force has, you know, and some decisions are, you know, making sense to some people, but not others, et cetera. And there are a lot of other bodies being considered before ours with, you know, different implications for different community members and such. And so a lot of learning, and I was thrilled to know that nothing was going to change with this commission. So
thank you.
Great news, bullet dodged, and put that one aside. we have plenty of other things to deal with. So thank you to everyone for your communities coming out and supporting those positions. Onward to legislation. So we have two local items and some statewide items this evening. I keep saying this, I think we're a bit perplexed about Supervisor Melgar's file 231224, originally introduced nearly 2 years ago, which would amend the housing code to authorize occupants of residential dwelling units to sue a property owner to enforce the prohibition on substandard housing conditions, is still active at the Land Use Committee after the supervisor twice continued this item to remain active until July 2025. So it's been a few months since then. Secondly is Supervisor Cheyenne Chen's file 250926, tenant protections related to residential demolitions and renovations. This will be at the Planning Commission on November 6th and the Board of Supervisors Land Use Committee on November 17th. In just a moment, after I'm finished with the general report, Senior ALJ Kumis will discuss this item with you. This is not a small one and not one to be skipped. On the statewide level, there are three laws taking effect on January 1st, 2026 that are worth mentioning. Assembly Bill 1414, sponsored by Assemblymember Buffy Wicks, who represents Berkeley and other portions of Alameda and Contra Costa counties. This bill requires that when a landlord arranges or bundles internet service through a third-party provider for building tenants, each tenant must be given the option to opt out of that subscription. Next is Assembly Bill 628, sponsored by Assemblymember Tina McKinner from Inglewood, which states that new, amended, or renewed leases post 1/1/26 for these units must include a stove and refrigerator, both purchased within the prior 10 years, and landlords must maintain them. There are exceptions for single room occupancy hotel units, supportive housing, and situations where the landlord and tenant expressly agree that the tenant will supply their own appliances. And then finally, Assembly Bill 246, known as the Social Security Tenant Protection Act of 2025, sponsored by Assemblymember Isaac Bryan of Los Angeles, creates a Social Security hardship affirmative defense in unlawful detainer cases based on non-payment of rent. If a tenant's Social Security benefits are delayed, reduced, or interrupted due to the action or inaction of the federal government, and the tenant is not at fault, the court must stay the eviction until the earlier of A, 14 days after the tenant's Social Security benefits are restored, or B, 6 months after the stay is issued. Once the benefits resume, the tenant must pay the back rent or enter a payment plan within 14 days. And if they do, the court must dismiss the case or set aside the judgment. And this law expires on January 20th, 2029. I'm now going to turn it over to Senior Administrative Law Judge Kumis, who's going to provide you a little bit of information on Supervisor Chen's tenant protection ordinance.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to try to keep this short, short as I can. So, I apologize, we kind of dropped into your packets at the last minute a copy of this legislation that was recently amended. But just for some background, so Mayor Lurie introduced his family zoning plan back in July of this year. And that's a really major zoning proposal that would allow larger and denser housing citywide, especially in the north and the west side of the city. And the idea being that it's intended to meet state housing targets and preempt any kind of state imposed upzoning. And then on September 9th of this year, Supervisor Chen introduced this companion measure, which is the legislation in your packets. And the idea is to try to mitigate the displacement risks tied to redevelopment. So her ordinance amends both the planning code and the rent ordinance to both implement and kind of expand upon tenant protections that already exist in state law. And so under this proposed legislation, before any demolition permit would issue, the project sponsor, the property owner, would have to agree to replace every rent-controlled or otherwise protected unit, and protected unit has a long definition, with a comparable unit in the new project. And any units occupied by lower income tenants would have to be replaced with housing that is affordable to that same income level as the tenant that was displaced. This legislation also adds a brand new just cause for eviction to our ordinance. We'll call it number 17, and it would allow eviction only when a permitted redevelopment project requires demolition of an entire building, and only after all of the tenant protections are met and, I guess, approved through the planning department. Tenants must be allowed to stay in the building until 6 months before construction begins, or 3 months if there are lower income households, and evictions would be banned during the school year for families with children or for educators. This ordinance would require the property owner to offer all of the displaced tenants a right of first refusal to a comparable unit in the new building if it's a rental project. For lower income tenants, the replacement unit must be offered at the tenant's prior rent or at an affordable rent, whichever is lower. Or if it's an ownership condominium building, it would have to be offered to the displaced tenant at an affordable ownership cost. Property owners must provide relocation assistance that is equivalent to Ellis Act payments for all tenants, regardless of income. But for lower income tenants, which is defined as anyone, any household that's below 80% of the area median income, for those tenants, they've been entitled to additional relocation assistance for up to 42 months or until they're offered a replacement unit in the new building. This could take 3 different forms. So the landlord has the option of either providing the displaced tenant with a substitute unit at their old rent, or providing a standardized monthly payment that uses a formula, or an individualized relocation aid, which uses a different formula under state law. Landlords can petition for financial hardship with the rent board, and then after a hearing, rent board ALJ could approve a payment plan or some other reasonable relief. The ordinance also adds several other rent ordinance amendments. It requires new written disclosures and buyout agreements that advises tenants of the rights they would forfeit if the property is redeveloped after they move out. It establishes a rebuttable presumption that if a tenant vacates within 1 year after receiving an OMI eviction notice, that they did so because of that notice, even if the notice was later rescinded and approved by the rent board. It also directs the rent board to hold hearings on certain tenant harassment claims. So a tenant or a former tenant could file a harassment report with the rent board if they believe the landlord tried to force them out of their unit. And if specific criteria are met, the rent board would have to schedule an investigative hearing before an ALJ within 45 days. The ALJ would issue findings on whether harassment occurred and if the tenant has already vacated, whether they left due to harassment. Either party could appeal to this commission. There are also changes for capital improvement evictions. So currently all tenants get a one-time kind of standardized payment, no matter how long they're displaced. So under this proposal, if a lower income tenant has to vacate for more than 3 months, they would be entitled to an additional monthly payment for up to 42 months. That covers the difference between their former rent and either an affordable rent standard or their actual temporary housing cost, whichever is less. Tenants seeking that assistance would have to file a form with the rent board verifying their income and their household size. And then the rent board would calculate the additional payment owed and notify both parties. Landlords could also request a hardship hearing before a rent board ALJ if those payments would cause financial hardship. So that's really just a short summary, to be honest. I want to give you a whole zoning lecture, but I think that's kind of the highlights. The full text is in your packets. We're going to discuss more, I think, next month, because that's going to be the next board meeting is the day after this goes to land use, and there could be some additional amendments. But I'm happy to answer any questions you have in the meantime.
Just curious, am I correct in understanding that Mayor Lori put out this proposal to sort of preempt the state mandates and sort of coming in and just sort of dictating and not having as much local control about meeting these mandates?
That's my understanding. So that's the family zoning plan, which is actually a separate piece of legislation. And that just,
yeah. Just curious how does it, I mean, is,
how does it all connect?
I mean, if there are many, many, like this legislation strikes me without, you know, just that it's going to make there's going to be more requirements to be met in order to engage in the redevelopment. And I'm just wondering if there's any insight into what happens with the state.
So the state mandate is that the city is supposed to, I think, like just allow for a certain 82,000 units or so to be built in San Francisco by a particular deadline. And that the family zoning plan is supposed to ease zoning restrictions, allow upzoning to help build more housing. But this legislation, right, is just about providing certain protections for tenants. And I mean, yeah, I mean, I guess I can't get into like the policy considerations and the politics of it all. But I think your question is just, is this going to deter property owners from redeveloping?
It's going to stop everything.
We were asking, or?
Yeah, this
is, yeah.
I guess what's going to happen with if our local efforts to generate meeting these state mandates, you know,
this is, if this passes, it's going straight to court. I mean, it's already, it's a given. This will be up to the DCA or the California Supreme Court to decide. But this isn't good.
When you say it's a companion measure, does that mean it's a separate proposition to be voted on, or is it attached to the family zoning
piece of legislation that will be voted on independently? But the idea is that these two pieces of legislation will kind of go forward together. I think there's been, you know, some pushback from the tenant advocacy community that the family zoning plan would lead to a lot more displacement. Right, tenant displacement, there'd be a bigger incentive for landlords to redevelop. And so I think that The idea that the supervisor had was that this legislation would track with the family zoning plan and just try to mitigate some of those problems. But it is two separate pieces of legislation. So one could pass and one might not. That's certainly possible. They both might not.
Could I be sent a copy of this? I don't seem to have it in my packet.
Yes, it was sent to the digital packet, so the OneDrive and via email. But I did say that if you'd like one printed, I can print.
I'll send it to her right now.
Thank you.
This is the second version of it. This ordinance was actually substituted last week and made a lot of changes. And I think it's likely to be amended more from here. I think there's still a lot of policy proposals that the supervisor has that they want to implement.
Did all these names of the supervisors co-sponsor this?
Yeah, I think it does have several co-sponsors. Let me pull it up.
This is going to be such a crap.
Yep.
Through Gmail.
Yeah. Just could I ask one last question?
Yeah.
Was the proposal that was submitted by the mayor's office just sort of a blank slate? I mean, it didn't have.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I'll be honest, I'm not that familiar with the details of the family zoning plan. It kind of falls outside my area of expertise when it comes to like zoning law. But I know some of what's included in Supervisor Chen's ordinance actually already is the law. So it's SB 330 is a state law that requires cities to basically have no net loss of housing. So basically you demolish a unit, you have to replace it with a comparable unit. So certain parts of this, it's like, it's already the law. It's just being implemented locally. But some of these tenant protections actually go a little bit farther than what's, you know, guaranteed in state law.
To answer your question though, there were some tenant protections in the family zoning plan, and there were also some small business protections because
that's what
that was another group that
jumped on,
felt worried that the density could displace them.
And so the co-sponsors we have are Chen, Fielder, Walton, Chan, Dorsey, Sauter, and Cheryl. It's got 7 co-sponsors currently.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's going to be a preemption fight.
Yeah, it's one problem.
If this passes, we will have a lot of work to do to implement a lot of these changes. So,
you know, maybe not if nobody develops things.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
people think,
you know,
well, that's a tragedy.
Currently, we don't see a lot of tenant occupied buildings being demolished, but, you know, the concern is, I suppose, that things could change.
Then let's move on to old business.
Old business, we have a continuing discussion on outreach regarding commission procedures. And most recently, we have the draft with Commissioner Hung's edits.
I really thought it was a good pairing there.
Yeah.
Do we need to approve this, or can we just kind of give it?
If there's a consensus from that, we can move forward with using those introductory remarks.
Can we give it a try? Anybody else?
Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. I will use those new remarks in the next meeting.
Business.
We have no new business.
Calendar items?
We We have the November 18th, 2025 regular in-person meeting at 25 Van Ness Avenue here in room 610. The reader of the Ramatush Ohlone land acknowledgement is Commissioner Chan. Currently, we have three appeal considerations. And I would like to confirm, do we want to add the operational efficiencies regarding the unlawful rent increase petitions as a new business item for the next meeting?
I think so. Is there any objection to adding that to new business?
Right. That is all I have under conduct items.
And just, sorry, just a reminder, to be crystal clear, there's no meeting November 11th because it's a holiday.
Oh.
And so that's why the meeting is on the 18th. You know, some people, yeah, just on autopilot, and you're like, second Tuesday. Hopefully we won't all show up.
Then we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The two public comment periods already occurred this evening, sir.
Job, we do this last.